You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
of your life.
Running like a red disease.
Running like a red disease. Ghetto people.
Stop giving up yourself.
Stop doing what you're doing to yourself, young. You got to learn to love yourself.
You are listening to African Perspectives, where we view the issues of our day from an African worldview and African-centered perspective. This program is unapologetically African. It is a custom in the African tradition to ask elders for permission to speak, having been granted permission. To our ancestors, whose shoulders we stand on, to our elders, whose shadows we walk in, I greet you, my dear brothers and sisters, in the language of one of the greatest civilizations on this planet. It gave the world the basic disciplines of knowledge of science, math, architecture, music, writing, law, religion, you name it, we did it. The Greeks called it Egypt, but they called themselves Kemet, and Kemet means land of the blacks. I greet you all in the Kemetic language, the word of peace, Hotep. It is truly an honor and a privilege to pour libation because we truly do stand on the shoulders of those who came before us. We're going to use water because water has no enemies. Water is the great cleanser, the great purifier. Everything on the planet that lives, it needs water, from a tiny microscopic organism to a tall redwood tree. We pour water into the earth to invoke the spirits of our ancestors, and we say the word Ashe, which simply means so be it. So we pour this libation to God, for all that God has done and for all that God will do. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to Mother Africa, birthplace of all humanity, everyone who has lived, everyone who will live in the future. We all have a common ancestral root in Africa. We pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. I mentioned Kemet in the opening. Kemet was the height, the apex, the zenith of African high culture. But there were others as well, as Timari, Punt, and Nubia. So we pour this libation to the classical civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa, of Ghana, Mali, Songhai, Benin, Great Zimbabwe. Civilizations that were flourishing and growing while Europe was in a medieval or dark age. The University of Sankore at Timbuktu, an outstanding educational institution. So we pour this libation to the contemporary civilizations of Africa. We say Ashe. We pour this libation to the Ma'afa, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the Infakani, the great tragedy, uprooted out of Africa. Our brothers and sisters lay a carpet along the Atlantic Ocean. We're in North America, South America, Central America, and throughout the diaspora. So we pour this libation to our brothers and sisters who suffered the Ma'afa, the Infakani, the Holocaust of our enslavement, the great tragedy. We pour this libation in their honor and in their memory. We do not know their names, but because of them and their sacrifice, we are here. So we say Ashe. We pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement. If you ever heard me do a libation, you will know that we were not slaves. I repeat, we were not slaves. We were captives. What does a captive want to do? Get free. So we pour this libation to all those men and women who fought against enslavement. In fact, I maintain that some of us are more of a slave today than we were in our initial captivity, because some of us are a slave to vice, to corruption, to drugs, sex, and violence. So we pour this libation to those who fought against enslavement: Gabriel Prosser, Nat Turner, Dingmark Vesey, Harriet Tubman. We always resisted, and we will always resist. So we pour this libation in the name and in honor of those men and women who fought against our captivity. We pour this libation to those unborn, those young men and women who will once again lead us back on the stage of human history as a free and proud and productive people. We sashay. We pour this libation to brotherhood and sisterhood, together for the union of family. We need each other. We don't have good family life. there's a saying, conditions shape conduct and consciousness. The conditions in our community are bad. The conduct towards each other is not good. Because why? We lack consciousness. And consciousness is more than just awareness. Consciousness is a deeper understanding of who you are historically, who you are culturally. So once we begin to understand the importance of brotherhood and sisterhood together for the union of family. Brothers and sisters, let us all say, Ashe, Ashe.
You are listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Good morning, African world. You are listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And I am your host, Baba Oshi. Hotep family, hope everything was well for you today. Hope you're going to have a good day. Hope you had a great weekend. Hope you had a chance to do all the things you want to do, should do, must do, can do, and will do. And I hope the weather was accommodating for you to do it. But of course, if it was not, and it had to get done, you got it done, because that's the kind of brother and sister that you is. And we appreciate you for that. That's right. Yeah. You're listening to African Perspectives. We're here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., 10 to 12 Central, 9 to 11 Mountain, or 8 to 10 Pacific, any other time around the world. But if you cannot listen to this program live, you can always go to our archives at timeforanawakening.com. At the top of the page, you'll see podcast. Click on that. The drop down, you'll see African Perspectives. Click on that, and there will be programs that are dated and titled. Also, you can use the shortcut. Ha-ha. That's right, babaoshi.net, 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 and you can get to African Perspectives. That's right. Other programming we have here on Time for an Awakening Media, today being Monday, we have from 8 to 9, Black Therapy Central with Dr. Mawia Kamban and Itaki Kamban from 8 to 9. And then from 9 to 10, Conversations, Reparations with Brother Jamoke and Sister Lacey of Encobra. And then on Tuesdays, from 8 to 10 on Tuesdays, Black Reality Think Tank with Dr. William Rogers. On Wednesdays, the Black Farmers Report. Every Wednesday from 8 to 9, the Black Farmers Report. If it's Friday and it's 8 p.m. Eastern, it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. On Saturdays from 7 to 10, the Sankofa Elders Council. From 7 to 9 on Saturdays, the Sankofa Elders Council. And then on Sunday, once again at 7 p.m., it's Time for an Awakening with Brother Elliot and Brother Richard. And the number to call is 215-490-9832. 215-490-9832. We buy black. We buy black. Oh, you know what I didn't do? I sure didn't, did I? Oh, Brother Oshi. Okay, let me try to get these up while I'm talking. Sometimes I get caught up in stuff I was reading and reading some stuff, and then next thing I knew, I was like, oh, man. Oh, shucks. But okay, okay. So I'm going to continue to do what I have to do here, because that's what I have to do while I go ahead and still do this program. Because sometimes if you mess up, you know, that's your fault, and so you just got to go ahead and you know, hang in there and improvise and adapt and overcome all of that good stuff. Yeah. So we buy black. We Buy Black, get everything you need from American African-owned businesses from WeBuyBlack.com. The largest online marketplace for American-owned businesses is WeBuyBlack.com. Brothers and sisters, go to WeBuyBlack.com. It's a holiday season. If you are looking to spend money with us, which I hope that you are at this holiday season, go to WeBuyBlack.com. There are other avenues. Hopefully there's businesses in your
particular city or town or whatever that you can spend some money, try your best. And not just during Kwanzaa from December 26th to January 1st. You know, you don't spend all your money with Walmart and Targets and Sam's Club and whatever. But then now, with a little bit of money you got left, you know, on the, you know, fourth day of Kwanzaa, on the fourth day of Kwanzaa, you're gonna, on Ujamaa, cooperative economics, you're going to spend some money. I mean, yeah, that's cool. You know, symbolically, that's cool, you know. But I just wish that we had that in our minds and in our hearts, that regardless, it ain't about Kwanzaa. It ain't about a season. It is about supporting one another, period. You know, I know this Friday, which is Black Friday, we'll talk about why it's Black Friday, and that's a recent. They wasn't calling it Black Friday for many years. They wouldn't even dare call it Black, you know. But why they call it Black Friday, and I know that an event is happening here in the Atlanta area. Actually, it is in Stonecrest, in the newly created city of Stonecrest, right off of I-20 and Pleasant Hill Road. A former Target store, former Target store, was abandoned and was bought by the Allen Enterprise, and they have developed the new Black Wall Street Market, the new Black Wall Street Market. We'll talk more about that. So, but We Buy Black, brothers and sisters, go to WeBuyBlack.com and support us. Okay? All right. Africa for the Africans. Brother Bomani Tayemba is in Tanzania. And, you know, very happy for him. Yep. November 18th through the 29th. And then the next trip is next month, December 24th to January 5th to Ghana. And then April 1st to April 11th, 2022 to Senegal and Gambia. And then May 24th to June 5th to Ghana. And then November 17th to the 28th to Tanzania. And all of these trips are $3,800, double occupancy. And everything you need is right there on the website, AfricaForTheAfricans.org. If you want to see pictures of previous tours, go to Facebook.com/Bomani. If you want to see videos of previous tours, go to YouTube.com/Bomani2007. Habashah, HabashahIncorporated.org. Habashah stands for Helping Africa by Establishing Schools at Home and Abroad. The great work that they do here locally with these programs, the Habashah Works Program, Black to Our Roots, Sustainable Seeds, Golden Growers, and the Urban Green Jobs, as well as the Kashi Project in Ghana. The Kashi Project, the buildings are up. You know, they still need support, brothers and sisters. Please go to HabashahIncorporated.org. You know, when you see somebody doing the work, and there's pictures, plenty of pictures of them doing the work, they deserve to be supported. HabashahIncorporated.org. The LEDGE Group. LEDGE stands for Land for the Environmental Development of Group Economics. That's right. Land for the Environmental Development of Group Economics. And they deal in the four areas for human existence, which is food, water, clothing, and shelter. They have 12 projects on six countries in on the continent, with over 170 employed and over 260 members. Brothers and sisters, become a member of the LEDGE Group. If you are a member, you can purchase land in Tanzania for $250 an acre. You can purchase land in Tanzania. Man, well, imagine what that would be. Exactly. Exactly.
Bibia Toomey.
A-B-I-B-I-T-U-M-I.com. BibiaToomey.com. Brothers and sisters, join BibiaToomey.com. Baba Professor Small. How to build black institutions and destroy the institutions of non-blacks. Historical precedents and how to guide. Has that coming up on December 4th. December 4th. And it's at 5 p.m. Ghana time, which would make that 1 p.m. Eastern time. 1 p.m. Eastern time. Sign up for this exclusive at BB Toomey Saturday seminar series with the one and only Professor Small, Baba Professor Small, James Small, and prepare to go from information to transformation in terms of your daily choices in the interests of African people and the land of African people, the Kemet. So, but yeah, go to BB Toomey, brothers and sisters. BB Toomey, BIBITUMI.com. Wadada's Healthy Marketing Juice Bar. Brothers and sisters, Wadada's Healthy Marketing Juice Bar is located here in the Atlanta area, in the West End, across the street from the Shrine, across the street from Soul Vegetarian Restaurant, up the street from the Shrine of the Black Madonna, which is open on Fridays and Saturdays from 1 to 7. If you're considering getting gifts and so forth, once again, think about the Shrine. They have a lot of stuff for you. They have books, they have clothing, they have furniture, they have a lot of stuff for you at the Shrine of the Black Madonna. And they're open on Friday and Saturday from 1 to 7. At the Wadada's, you can get healthy smoothies, vitality drinks, you know, pies, bean pie, veggies. And also, too, on Saturday and Sunday, they have vegan dishes for sale. That a caterer come in and sell vegan dishes on Saturday and Sunday. But delicious desserts, nice smoothies. That's Wadada's. Give them a call at 404-444-1635. That's 404-444-1635. The Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall. I got to give Mama Nia a call because she's looking for help. Hopefully she'll need it, because hopefully a lot of people are going to be in the store buying gifts and books and so forth while she can maintain the cash register. So I'm going to try my best to lend support and help her out. And so go to the Medu Bookstore in the Greenbrier Mall, or give Mama Nia a call at 404-346-3263. That's 404-346-3263. The Black Dot Cultural Center and Bookstore in Lithonia, Brother Gazimde Ajamu, who is doing an outstanding job of rearranging his store. It looks great. He has a coffee bar in there now, delicious coffees, teas, bean pie. That's right. So give Brother Gazimde Ajamu a call at 404-519-8107. 404-519-8107. Afroletics, I still kept their card. Someone announced them. They have a store in the new Black Wall Street Market. Out there in Stonecrest, they have a store. It's where they're selling the athletic wear with African-themed names, the Omex, the Zulus. That's right. All kinds of good stuff. The Dogon Star Seed, the Moors, the Rebels. Yeah, Afroletics, along with some other good stores that you can check out. So like I said, this Friday is their grand opening. So check it out. Homeland Village. They're not open on Mondays, but from Tuesday through Sunday, Homeland Village opens from 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. It's located in Macon, Georgia, at 2910 Napier Avenue, Macon, Georgia. Give Brother Bija a call at 478-256-1166. That's 478-256-1166. He has books. He has furniture. He has clothing. He even has a vegan restaurant inside. And you can do stuff that's outside. I mean, man, Brother has utilized that space. And, in fact, I've been to Macon a few times. Didn't know they were there. I went there because Brother Umar had a presentation there. It turned out very nice. And my good brother and good sister Shelly Amundsen was there. She was set up with Sun Goddess Sense, you know. So, yeah. Us lifting us. Us lifting us to economic development cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa. Us lifting us. Every day of a Thursday night broadcast, every Thursday night at 9, from 9 p.m. to 10 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio. That's blogtalkradio.com/ULU for the Thursday night broadcast, every Thursday night. If you want to call just to listen or give questions or comments or concerns, you know, you can dial 929-477-2789. That's 929-477-2789. Us lifting us to economic development cooperative for our people in the spirit of Ujamaa cooperative economics, or as we like to say, family-centered economics. We had the Kibuka this past Saturday. And I was honored to do the libation. And based upon what I understand, it was a good turnout over the internet for brothers and sisters. And Baba Baruti is outstanding in his presentation. But to hear the things that he's saying, it just about what these folks have done to our people is just so sickening, man. It's so sad. Yeah. Yeah. In fact, this is what he wrote recently. Whether you're able to attend Kibuka lecture event this Saturday or not, spend the day in remembrance. Spend this time in dedicated conscious honor of our ancestors. Make this day of remembrance unlike any other, even though we know that acknowledging our love and appreciation of them should be a constant. Of course, we know that there are detractors among us who are so afraid and in love with the evil that they run from the sight of the ancestors within. But their words only reveal their mental sidle escapist confusion and should never be reason enough for us to turn our thoughts and emotions away from those who biologically and spiritually fought to get us here. We come from a righteous resilience. And this we need to remember and act on always. Bibi Fohorie. Bibi Fohorie means our victorious destiny. Yeah, I had to read that. He sent that on Facebook. Yeah. You know. Yep. And we must remember. That's, to me, it's a given. Brothers and sisters, if you want to get some of Baba Baruti's books, go to AkabinHouse.com. AkabinHouse.com. If you want to use PayPal and Cash App to give donations, or you want to send donations to Akabin Institute and the work that he and his wife, Mama Inia, are doing, you can make a check of money order out to Akabin Institute. Send it to P.O. Box 10786. Atlanta, Georgia, 30310. That's 10786-30310. Cash App, $Yah, the letter M, Baruti, B-A-R-U-T-I. And you can make a consistent donation that is so desperately needed. And you know it. Oh, I must have missed. Yeah. Sun Goddess Sense. Sun Goddess Sense, your one-stop natural shop located at 4140 Jonesboro Road in Forest Park, Georgia, inside the International Discount Mall, booth 225. And for more information, contact my good sister Shelly Amundsen at 404-434-7963. That's 404-434-7963. And, of course, also to my sister Gabby Aurelia, who is doing great work on the island of Haiti, in the northeastern portion of the island of Haiti. Go to Sanjay-Haiti.org. Sanjay-Haiti. Yeah, wow. Just see, I'm just forgetting stuff, you know. That happens sometimes. I know it happens to you too, don't it? Yeah, it do. But I don't know, some people, you know, they even though they might be up in age, you know, their mind is still sharp. They've done some good stuff in terms of prevention, in terms of what they eat and drink and so forth. Didn't do a lot of bad stuff. So, you know, those brothers and sisters, yeah. Yeah, I tell you. Before I get off into our present, my reading presentation, I want to do what I haven't done in quite a while. And, yeah. You know, I tell you. I read this quote from the brother who wrote the book, The Siren Psyche, because we need to be siren, even if, as he states, in our own little area of personal space, your mind, you know, the siren psyche. We need to be siren. But he has a quote that is, to me, just pointed, and I've read it a number of times. I will always read it. He said, "There is no other historical instance of a formerly enslaved people who valued integration with their former captors to the point where they completely abandoned the superior wealth of their own homeland." This is a hell of a quote. It really is. This is serious because it's factual and it's pointed. Excuse me. There is no other historical instance. So there's nothing in history where a people who were enslaved, a people who were captured and enslaved, and then once released or fought for release, valued to be integrated with the people who captured them to such degree that they completely abandoned the idea of being sovereign, of being independent, of being self-determining, and the wealth of their land that they had that would be theirs, they abandoned it. There is no other historical instance of a formerly enslaved people who valued integration with their former captors to the point where they completely abandoned the superior wealth of their own homeland. Wow. Yeah. I tell you, that's deep, ain't it? Yeah. Here's another one. That's deep. Yeah. This is what Lord Macaulay's addressed to the British Parliament on the 2nd of February of 1835. He said this, 2nd of February, 1835. "I have traveled across the length and breadth of Africa, and I have not seen one person who is a beggar, who is a thief. Such wealth I have seen in this country, such high moral values, people of such caliber, that I did not think we could ever conquer this country unless we break the very backbone of this nation, which is her spiritual and cultural heritage. And therefore, I propose that we replace her old and ancient education system and her culture. For if the Africans think that all that is foreign and British is good and greater than their own, they will lose their self-esteem, their native culture, and they will become what we want them to be, a truly dominated people, a truly dominated nation." Damn. Damn. Man, I tell you. Kwame Nkrumah said this. He said this in 1961 after the 1957 having gained independence. They were the first country to gain independence from Britain. He said, I believe strongly and sincerely that we, with the deep-rooted wisdom and dignity, the innate respect for human lives, the intense humanity that is our heritage, that the African culture united under one federal government. He was talking about not just a country. He was talking about the continent. He was talking about one Africa. He was a Pan-African. He was talking about one Africa at that time. United under one federal government will emerge not just as another world bloc to flaunt its wealth and strength, but as a great power whose greatness is indestructible because it is not built on fear, envy, and suspicion, nor won at the expense of others, but founded on the hope, trust, and friendship, and directed to the good of all mankind. The Speech of Freedom in 1961. Sometime later, this is what he said. If we do not approach the problems in Africa with a common front and a common purpose, we shall be haggling and wrangling amongst ourselves until we are colonized again and become the trolls of a far greater colonialism than we had suffered from heretofore. Oh, how pathetic. Oh, how prophetic. Very prophetic, but very pathetic, because it was true. It was prophetic, but it was pathetic because it was true. To be truly liberated, African people must come to know the nature of European thought and behavior in order to understand the effect that the European has had on our ability to even think victoriously. We must be able to separate our thoughts from Europeans' thoughts so as to visualize a future that is not dominated by Europe. This is demanded by an African-centered view because why? We are Africans. And also because the future towards which Europe leads us is genocide. Marimba Ani. Brothers and sisters, I read these things, and I will continue to do that as constant reminders. A lot of things that I say on this program may appear to be repetitive. Some, I believe, is just some positive reinforcements. I think they're necessary. And, of course, I appreciate you listening. I don't know how old my listeners are. I believe some of them are more likely about my age or maybe older, some maybe younger. You know, I know I may not have, you know, the millennials, you know, because some of them, they're not thinking in that way. They're believing that they can be a part of this system. They believe that this system is just as much theirs as it is Caucasians. And they want Caucasians to hire them. They want to live where they live. Go to the schools they go to. Yeah. They feel just as much right as it is theirs. Yeah. You know, today, of course, is the 22nd of November, the day that John F. Kennedy was killed. And, of course, if you, in 1963, if you were around at the time, you know, 1963. And that was also the time that Malcolm was asked about the Kennedy assassinations. And he said it was chickens, looked like chickens coming home to roost. Basically, if you're the greatest purveyor of violence on the planet, in which America is. America was then, it is now, and it will be. Because that's just who they are. Americans are the most violent prone people on the planet. They have always been at war. They are very violent people. and they support and protect violence. This Kyle Rittenhouser verdict is a prime example. Now, I don't think the Aubrey case will be the same. I think those three will get some time. No, they will not go. No, they will not. They will not be able to claim self-defense and get off like Rittenhouser did. And, of course, the groundswell of support for Kyle Rittenhouser. Sad. The money raised for his defense. I think he raised through PayPal and other means $500,000. And they were still asking for more. More than likely, they'll face a civil trial. I'm not sure how they'll attack that and what they'll do. But, you know, there's one thing that was interesting to me, aside from how overt the judge was in terms of his support for Rittenhouse, which is really pathetic and sad. He should retire. He should retire right after that case. You did your service to European, Caucasian, extremism, racism, and privilege openly and justly for those who believe in that madness. You did it. You know, when you see him sitting down there and they were watching, I think, a digitally enhanced version of the attack, you know. So, yeah. I caught something on Facebook. You know, you always catch something on Facebook. But I caught this from a military legal writer. Military, Larry Knight. And he says, I'm seeing a lot of ignorance and misinformation flying around about what happened in Kenosha. I'm going to set the record straight from a professional legal position, as well as from a former military position. I'm going to explain some things from a more technical angle, derived from my many years as a paralegal and from my experience working in federal criminal justice and prosecution. Legally, if you're in the process of a commission of a crime, it negates your ability to claim self-defense if you kill someone, as in, it can't be even entered into as your official defense in court. It is similar to getting rear-ended at a red light, though zero fault of your own, but you're driving without a license or you're driving without insurance. It automatically makes you at fault because you weren't even legally allowed to be driving. Dude, 17-year-old Kyle Rittenhouse was not supposed to have that gun. But of course, the judge dismissed that, because that should have negated his defense of self-defense. But of course, yeah. That 17-year-old Kenosha had committed two crimes and was not even legally allowed to open carry the rifle he used to shoot three people. This means that he legally cannot claim self-defense. Another key discussion is the Castle Doctrine. Some of you may vaguely familiar with it, as it is with allows you to use a deadly force when someone comes into your home unlawfully. When someone comes into your house. But there are some finer points most people don't realize that you generally have to do some formal legal studies to know. First, as soon as someone sets foot inside the threshold of your home uninvited that you believe intends to commit a crime, you can legally use deadly force, and it is immediately considered self-defense if they haven't made any violent threats. Even if they haven't made any violent threats or any actions towards harming you, their mere presence coming into your home unannounced, right in through the door, you automatically feared for your life and you shot them. You can, because they came into your home unannounced. This is because in every instance out every instance outside your home, you are required to retreat. You are required to retreat and extract yourself from a dangerous situation if possible. It is a legal mandate, not a suggestion. Your home is considered the final retreat point, and legally you should be safe in your home or your castle. There is nowhere else to retreat to. This is why you're able to immediately use deadly force. However, it is not to protect your property. It is for you to protect your life, not your property. At once the burglar, for instance, has left your home, the threat to your life is considered neutralized and deadly force is no longer authorized. So if a burglar runs out of the door and down the street with your TV and you are no longer allowed, now you are no longer allowed to shoot after him because there's not a threatening position to your life. You call the police, you file a complaint with your insurance, you get a new TV. If you shoot the burglar in the back as he runs down the street with your TV, you can and should be charged with murder. While you are out in public, this means a lot of things, obviously. It means that there is no fear more scrutinized in boxes that must be checked in order to claim self-defense. See? There's more scrutiny and there's more boxes to check in order to claim self-defense. You must first be in imminent danger of losing your life and limb. Getting into an argument and feeling scared of being punched in the face from an unarmed person, not likely to be a situation where deadly force is authorized. You must retreat. If someone shoots at you or pulls a knife on you in the street, that is deadly force and can be met with deadly force. But if the person is unarmed and cannot shoot them because you're afraid of a little scuffle, you cannot shoot them because they're afraid. This is why Rittenhouse illegally shot the first protester. This is one of the many reasons it cannot be considered self-defense. The man threw a plastic garbage bag with trash in it at him and missed, and Rittenhouse shot him. He chased his victim and instigated a fight by brandishing and flagging down with his rifle because he is an untrained idiot with a gun. The protester was not a threat. The protester was not a threat. And even if he was, all he had to do was retreat back to the police line. He rushed at the protesters with a gun drawn to pick a fight. And people are acting as if he was just there to keep peace. He fired into a crowd. And it's a miracle he didn't hit more people that hadn't thrown a plastic bag, more people that were just trying to protest police brutality, which is a real issue in this country. And then he did finally run away. Some more protesters attempted to subdue him after he had already murdered somebody. He tripped and shot two people trying to stop him from shooting others. The fact that the police didn't arrest him and take him into custody right then and there, even if they had suspected it could be self-defense, is a grave issue that the police department. I could further dissect the situation, but for now, I'm going to end with people passing around misinformation about the victims being criminals, so they deserved it. First, there are no actual records of Jacob Blake or the people shot at Rittenhouse by Rittenhouse as being any official sex offenders. They're on the register. None of them raped a 14-year-old girl years ago. This is a complete fabrication being purposely spread by right-wing extremist sites in order to try and justify the shooting. And believe me, they did. They did. Jacob Blake was indeed awaiting trial for sexual assault and trespassing and did have a warrant for his arrest. It was not assault of a child because this is a different charge with a different title. On charging documents, it would literally say that it was against a child from what is publicly known, he allegedly broke into a ex-girlfriend's house and allegedly assaulted her. But he is innocent until proven guilty and still deserves his day in court. He could truly be innocent. But of course, unknown, they shot him 7 times in the back. Rittenhouse's victims did not appear to have any record. And even if they did, he couldn't have known that at the time. You cannot insist a shot was justified after the fact because that person was a criminal. Criminals have rights too, whether you like it or not. And it is enshrined in the very documents that built this country, which of course I could give less than a rat's ass about. And if you don't like the Constitution and Bill of Rights, I don't know what the hell to tell you. I could care less. This is also not my opinion. This is literally how the criminal justice system works. The writer says he holds a degree in paralegal studies, served 8 years with the Army Paralegals. I've worked for criminal divisions in Chicago, U.S. Attorney's Office, and currently work in the federal law enforcement. This is what I do for a living, and I'm not pulling this out of my ass. My knowledge is a culmination of working in the field and being passionate about justice for 16 years. I'd be happy to send you the sources, opinions, and case law and statutes if you need it. I did not get this from mainstream media. In fact, I'm not brainwashed by the left. I'm an independent progressive. May he face justice for what he did, and may we find a way to get on common ground before more fuses to this powder keg are lit. This has been my TED Talk. Yeah, I hear you, man. Best analysis. Judge Stamper said this is the best analysis he's seen. Ashe. Yeah, Judge. In fact, I need to get Judge Stamper. Give him a call. See if he can come on and talk about this. Yeah. So the fact that, remember, he, 646, good afternoon.
Yeah, what's happening, Oshi, man?
How you doing, brother?
Hey, man, I'm hanging in there. How was your weekend?
Good. It was good. It's a good weekend. My grandson played well in his games, and they won one, lost one. The one they lost was a very tough loss. They were losing, and it came back, and he was instrumental helping them come back. And yeah, it was a good game. And then yesterday they blew out some.
Sounds like the Knicks.
Yeah, I'm up. Yeah.
You know, they'll get down, they'll come back on you,
yeah.
They'll do all of those things,
yeah.
But in the end, they'll lose. You yeah. know what I mean?
Well,
but,
I'll tell you,
you know, that's the way it
is. Yeah, but I think the Knicks, will, you know, along with the other teams in the East are playing a lot better, and particularly the Knicks. Particularly the Knicks are playing a lot better. They were in the playoffs last year. They'll be in the playoffs this year. You know, the Knicks are a lot better. Yeah.
Yeah, I usually pop in on them, but you know, my team is the Warriors. I just love the way they play. So I don't miss their games.
They are looking good.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah, they know how to play.
Yeah.
They know how to play basketball.
Yeah, they are.
You know what
good.
I mean?
Yeah.
The way the game should be played.
Mm.
But quite quick, Oshi, I wanted to ask you, are you doing a special program Wednesday or Friday on Misgiving?
Yes,
Day?
I am.
Turkey Day?
Yes, I am.
Which day are you doing it?
On Wednesday.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. Because, you know, the truth always need to be told about that horrid day,
yeah.
man.
Oh, yeah.
I don't understand how our people even sit down at a table and participate in this type of madness and then try to justify it
yeah.
as some sort of family get together and function. No, mm-hmm. That's a day where you basically supposed to give reverence to the ancestors. You
yeah.
know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because you know, mm-hmm. when you really understand the relationship between African people, indigenous people, and this mutanoid, caucasoid, degenerate, lowlife, saltine, whatever else you want to call evil.
Yeah.
It gives you a real clear picture of what happened to our people over the period of time since we've been on this continent.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Our people really don't have no clear understanding of the brutalization, the manipulation, the trickery, the deceit, and the pure evil of this white man.
Yeah.
If you just look at what he did to the Native Americans, we're not talking about what he did to us. But if you just look at what he did to them, it would be absolutely mind-boggling.
Yeah, I mean, he's responsible. He's responsible for killing tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions of people on this planet.
Yeah.
Hundreds of millions of people on this planet. You know, in listening to Baba Barudi this past weekend for Kibuka, you know, and you know, it's tough to listen, man. It's tough to hear him talk about what these folks have done to us and you know, how they mistreated us so badly and dehumanized us and degraded us. It's just tough, man, you know. And yet there's so many of our people don't want retribution, don't want reparations, don't want. I mean, it's sad, it's sick,
and don't even wanna understand or take into consideration what Baba Barudi is saying. They don't even wanna sit down and internalize that this is the way that your people have been treated. And this is why you act and behave in the manner in which you do today towards one another. And that, unfortunately, more of us are trying to act and behave like the Yorugu than we are trying to act and behave like our African selves.
That's right.
It's like we don't have no reverence whatsoever to be an African and the values of being African. We just want to be like this European, have his things, you know, be a part of his system, never try to build community for ourselves. You know what's so sad is, and, you know, people criticize when you say this, but we the only people who really have no community. Every other nationality in this country has a community, someplace where they can call theirs, where they can go and they dictate every aspect of that entity or that community, business, education, all of that. We the only people who don't have that. But then you want to talk about the glorification and the glory of Harlem. I live in Harlem. There is no Harlem.
No, not
all,
anymore.
That's all past pretense,
yeah,
bro.
Yeah, yeah.
You
not
know
anymore.
What I mean? The white man, every other nationality, you know, have a semblance of community in Harlem than, as one would say, indigenous black people. Let me tell you something. And I live in Harlem, right dead smack in the center of Harlem. The African from the continent got more community than indigenous black people do in Harlem. And I dare somebody to call up and challenge me and tell me otherwise. That right there is sad, man.
Yeah.
It shouldn't happen like that. It's just like the ATL, just like every place.
Right, it is. Just
you
like
know,
every place.
You have to have a community.
It's just like everything. It's just like every place, you know.
It's sad.
It
How could you have other nationalities have community, have agency, and all of those things surrounding you, but you have nothing? How could you have a Chinatown, a Little Italy?
Yeah.
All of these things.
And
but
see,
here it is. Those who built the country, they don't have nothing.
See,
the
problem with what happened to us is that the religious leadership, the political leadership, all of them, the educationally, all of them wanted integration. All of them believed that was most important to, for us to live with white folks, have their jobs, have them promote us, to do all of these things as opposed to doing for ourselves. We believe that if it was all black, it was inherently inferior because we've been trained to believe that. As opposed to saying it's all us and we are going to, you know, and then, but also too, remember, if it was and it was strong, what happened? It was destroyed. If it was all ours, because at one time it had to be all ours because of deep segregation. And then if it grew to something, it was destroyed. And so then in the 50s, from the 50s onwards, particularly into the 60s and into the 70s, you know, the push for us to be like them, to live where they live, to have the jobs that they have and so forth, you know, was there as opposed to doing for ourselves and building for ourselves. And so today we are in a much worse situation today as a people than we were.
Much worse.
We are. A lot of people don't want to deal with that and don't agree with that, but we are. You know, from a lot.
And I just like to know, what did integration get us? What did it get us?
No, nothing collectively, but it got some of us individually to a position where, there's some of us who are billionaires. There's some of us who are millionaires. There's some of us who live a serious lifestyle individually. But it doesn't translate to us collectively because we are a collective people. But for those who have, you know, bought into this madness, you know, who love it, who cherish it, who want to be all part of it, it is fine for them, you know.
Hey, Oshie, you know, at one time we came out of slavery, Jim Crow, and all of that, right?
Mm-hmm.
We came out of that situation. My question to you is this. We came out of it, and what have we really gained from it? Our children are not being educated on the level that they should be. We basically have, which was probably one of the key components of our community, was teachers. We no longer have teachers. I mean, we just, when you look at it, what do we have? What do we represent? What do we produce? What do we really, in all honesty, give back to society other than being entertainers for the short fee?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, where is our, you know, Booker T's? Where's our Du Boises? Where's our Washington Carvers? Where's our intellectuals? You know what I mean? That are putting forward a path to how we should be developing as an African people. Who's taking over for Dr. Ben and Dr. Carr and moving us in the direction that they were back in the day?
And see,
I mean, it's just sad, man. It's really sad.
It is, because Negroism is what's predominant. You know,
there you go.
It is what's predominant. And that mindset, and part of it is the religious community, because the religious community, Christianity, you know, is... I'm going to say it, man. It has been one of the worst things that has happened to us, buying into this Caucasian's religion and believing in it.
No question.
You know, has been a detriment, a deep detriment, because number one, it does not speak to collectivism. It does not speak to us as a whole. It speaks to us just like every damn thing else individually. Oh, I got mine. I'm blessed and highly favored. No, it doesn't. You know?
No.
And so, since that is predominant in our lives, you know, we can't move collectively. You know, we can't.
We don't even know what direction we're going in.
No, we don't. We can't pull our resources together.
No.
I mean, you know, and so I'm anxious to see, because you know, based upon on my almost 70 years of living, I've seen things that rose and I've seen things that have died. I have knowledge of our history. You know, I'm a constant reader. I understand these things. I follow those brothers and sisters who looked at our situation and who posed a different direction, who were African-centered, who were Pan-Africanists, who believed in self-determination, liberation, sovereignty for African people. I embrace that as opposed to these folks who are constantly willing to go along to get along and beg and plead. And so I've seen where there were businesses that we've had that died. Just like Sullivan, Reverend Dr. Leon Sullivan, and what he did in Philadelphia. You know, from my understanding, and you know, talking with brother Ralph and so forth, that strip mall that they developed, you know, is still there, but it doesn't have, you know, it's not what it was, and it were, or definitely what it should be. I'm anxious to see here in Atlanta, out in Stonecrest, which is east of Atlanta, off of I-20. You know, in Stonecrest, there's a brother. Allen Enterprises who bought a vacant Target and created the new Black Wall Street Market. And I mean, it looks great. The grand opening is Friday, you know, and I'm looking forward to see how it continues to develop. I do know some vendors in there.
OC, could you tell me, or do you know what businesses are in there?
A lot of them.
Are they black businesses?
Yes, they are.
Are they white businesses?
No, they're black businesses. They're black businesses. From all that I've seen so far, they're black businesses. I can't speak to the fact that could somebody be fronted by Caucasian? I don't know. Maybe not.
I mean,
yeah, but everybody.
Did you get a grocery store there?
They're going to have a store there, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Because
There isn't one now, and they have some restaurants. They even have a fine dining restaurant. They even have a jazz club they're proposing. So, I mean, you know, I'm really looking forward to how this develops. Yeah, go ahead.
Oshi, the reality is this. Black people have to patronize the place and not have to be put in a position, if they do patronize the place, as being seen and deemed as being a racist because now they want to take their business to black folks.
Mm-hmm.
If black folks just spent half of what they spent with the Urugu,
yeah,
we could probably be in a better position.
Yes.
But unfortunately, we deem if we don't give our money to the Urugu, we're not being inclusive. You understand what I'm saying?
Well,
so, I mean,
you know,
it's just like I heard that T.I. and Mike and all of those cats there
mm-hmm.
are building a development. What's wrong with black folks going into development and building that development and
right.
participating in the development of that development? What's wrong with not living amongst white folks?
Yeah, well,
white folks don't even want you to live around them.
Well,
they get upset about you barbecuing. They get upset about you playing your music too loud. They get upset about just any and every damn thing.
Well, they're trying to displace us.
Run away from they're, so they're,
right. Well, they're trying to displace us in the city of Atlanta through gentrification. There are areas of the city of Atlanta that have been American African people living there for 40, 50, 60 years. Predominantly us, and now some of those communities are changing, and because number one, the people who have lived there cannot afford to live there any longer because of the taxes. They raised the tax base up, and so you know, just like what happened here where I live, you know, because I live in the city of Atlanta, you know, and the tax base has risen, so I pay a lot more in escrow than I had paid before, almost $150 more a month. You know,
man, I know the taxes. I know the taxes that I pay on my properties is mm-hmm. much cheaper in upstate than, you know, is in mm-hmm. lower state. I mean, it's just ridiculous. I know a same size house you could pay upstate maybe $2,000 or less in taxes, and here you paying $12,000-$14,000 in taxes. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm like this. I've never wanted to live around white folks. I never saw the reason for living around white folks. I remember back in the day when I lived out in Queens, there was a white section and there was a black section. Matter of fact, I didn't live too far from where John Gotti and them. I remember back in the day when Michael Griffin got ran over. I didn't live too far from where he got ran over. And I think it was South Ozone Park or out that area. Let me tell you something. When it got dark, if you had any sense, your black ass wasn't going to be in that community.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But the white folks, when it got dark, they could be in our community and be safe.
Exactly.
I never understood that. But the reality is, we will protect a white person way more than we will protect ourselves. And we have to change that mentality. Because I always feel, why is it a Yoruba can't get it? You know what I mean? I mean, why can't he get that smoke? You know, if he get out of hand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's how I was when I was coming up. You know, a white boy say something slick to me, we gonna throw hands.
Yeah.
But that was a whole different situation. Now, it seems to me, your kids want to have relationships with these white boys and white girls. I was listening to a nephew of mine talk a couple of weeks ago about his white friends. Now, I was about to school him, but I said to myself, man, I'm wasting my time with this crazy young Negro. You know what I mean? If I was to give him a rundown on this Yoruba, all I would do would get pushback from his parents. And I ain't trying to get into no beat-up session with grown folks about white people. So I just listened to him and looked at him, and I just shook my head, and that was it. I changed the conversation. But to listen to him talk so glowingly about a Yoruba, I just was like, well, damn, see, that's man, because, you really did brainwash.
Yeah, because why? Because you're trained to think individually, so you don't look at what Caucasians have done to us collectively, the collective Caucasian mindset, which is very evil and demonic and very selfish and greedy. No, you look at the individual Caucasian who might be a nice guy, might be a nice gal, you know, blood, whatever.
But collectively, you'll cut your head off.
That's right. Because they die, you know. But let me take a break, Jay, and I'll be back on the other side.
All right.
And I hope they give me a call, okay? All right. Well, let me take this call right here. 919, good afternoon, before I go to break.
Good afternoon, Brother Oshie.
Hey,
good afternoon
brother.
To everyone on the air.
How are you today, Baba?
I'm doing pretty good, thank you.
Good.
I just want to say that, you know, you have a stick-up artist and you have a con artist.
Okay.
They both want the same thing from you. But they have different ways of getting it.
Right.
So the stick-up artist, you recognize that person with the gun that took something from you as an evil, hateful, demonic person. But the con artist, you may very well think he's your friend.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the way he presents himself to you.
Mm-hmm.
So at the time that black people were so-called released from slavery, they knew what white people were. And they got as far away from them as they could. And
right.
They avoided them as much as they possibly could.
Yes, and you're right.
But as time went on, as you said, when we moved up into the 50s and 60s, white people understood that they had to use different tactics to get from you what they wanted. So they presented themselves to you as friends and offered things to you that seemed like they would solve your problems.
Mm-hmm.
Integration sounds like a very good thing. So if you was a black kid in a black community going to a dilapidated cold school with no heat and no running water and everything, and you go to night school, how could you not want to do that?
That's right. Yeah.
It appeared to be a solution. Mm-hmm. You did not recognize the con artist.
That's right. Mm-hmm. You were bamboozled.
You did not recognize the con artist.
Mm-mm.
Everything that African people in this country do is a reaction. We are actually all reacting to the original sin, us being kidnapped.
Mm-hmm.
We have never had the upper hand from that time. So we only always reacting to what this person, with all of his resources, is able to do to us.
Yep, crises orientated. Yep.
Yeah.
Never
so
thinking forethought.
Happens,
yeah.
We have to figure out a way. And we don't, and it's not that we have good choices. And so they say black people should do this and black people should do that. We don't have all those good choices. If we had all these things available to us, we wouldn't be having these problems.
That's right. We wouldn't be in this situation. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's like asking somebody, do you want the electric chair or the gas chamber? It's your choice.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a choice.
Because they're both the same. They're both going to eliminate you. They're both going to exterminate you.
I lived in New York. I lived in Brooklyn. And the electric company cut the gas off. People knew how to go downstairs and put pennies into the box. All that current going through that copper could have burned down the whole block.
Mm.
It wasn't a good choice, but people needed lights.
Mm-hmm.
Most of our behavior is based on responding to a need that we have that we don't have many options. And most often, we pick the worst option because any option that the white man makes available to you is a bad option.
Mm-hmm.
Beware the white man bearing gifts.
That's for damn sure.
Like you said, there's sometimes I work for the New York City Transit Authority, and there was a situation where one of my coworkers, a brother, car broke down, and this white guy that worked on the job picked him up every day and brought him to work and took him home every day.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't tell him that cracker wasn't no good.
Right. Right. Because he was good to him. Damn good to him. You know,
the cracker was a cracker.
Yeah.
That's the question. Did he know that the cracker was a cracker? I mean, it's one thing to accept assistance from a cracker and not know that he's a cracker. And it's another to accept assistance from the cracker and know that he's a cracker. Now, if you know he's a cracker, then you know how to keep your eyes and your ears open and pay attention to whatever situation the cracker may place you in. Today,
he needed a ride to work.
Yeah, okay. Now, what I'm saying to you is there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with that as long as you know that by taking that ride with that cracker, you may be in danger. We as African people today do not understand the danger of the cracker and what he is in relationship to our existence on the planet. We think if a cracker is nice to us, then we should be able to not fear that cracker. That's the most dangerous cracker in the world. If you don't know that he's a cracker, because then you have no sense of defense up. So whenever he wanna do whatever he wanna do to you, He can just do it because you're not thinking that this cracker may hurt you at some point in time. And isn't that what happened to the Native Americans? They never thought that the cracker would behead them and cut their head off and kick it around like a soccer ball and play games with a bloody head. Come on, man. That's one of our biggest problems.
This is the point that I'm making. This was a coworker, and he needed a ride to work, and somebody offered him a ride to work, and that's what he was getting, a ride to work. I saw something altogether different, but I knew that his reaction to that person would be different than my thinking toward that person. But all this person needed, he was in a bad situation, and he needed some help.
Right.
Black people are always in a bad situation. Hold on, Jay.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Baba.
Black people are always in a bad situation trying to figure out a way out of it, and when the helping hand comes along, what are you going to do? You don't have that many options.
Right. But see, the thing is this. Hold on, Jay. See, the thing is this. Yes, he was nice to you. You know, I learned a long time ago, you know, about Caucasians in general, particularly since I started to look at and understand our history, and more importantly, looking at them and their history and their relation to us. Probably my most eye-opening book, although I will always say, would be Urugu, because there's sections of that book that talk about how the Caucasian sees us, how they see themselves, to talk about the religion, how the religion has affected us. To me, I consider that book to be the Bible. You know, in terms of, for me, in terms of my conscious raising, in terms of waking me up, you know, and it helped me understand. Because, I mean, I've worked with Caucasians. I'm a firefighter. I was a firefighter, you know. Yep. And I recognize that when the bell rings, how we have to work together, regardless of how we may or may not like each other. But we have a job to do to help whoever calls us, and it could be us, because most often in major cities, it is us. Because we live in the worst neighborhoods with the worst situations, with the worst infrastructures, and so therefore more likelihood chances of fire, and we die mostly of fire. So you know, once that bell rings, I'm there to do my job, and I'm hoping that he or she is also, be a Caucasian, Latino, whatever. They're there to do the job that we've been trained to do to affect a good outcome for those people that we serve, that we get paid to do. You know, and so, but I don't expect them to be my protecting friend outside of the fire department. I don't expect them to do anything. In fact, I would rather them not even talk to me, because I had no relationships outside of the fire department with Caucasians, you know, except one who coached football with me. Yep. Who coached football with me outside of that, you know. But let me take a going over to their house
yeah. having barbecues and all that right. nonsense. And you wasn't coming to buy an evil.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, early on in my career, I went to some of the social events that they used to have. They don't have that shit no more. Because, you know, they've got fights and so forth. Because the dynamic changed. When I first came on, there was only a small handful of us. And they had these social events with Caucasians, and particularly all men. There were very no women. Would come together, bowling sweepers and smokers and gambling things, you know. But then,
and the big bro had to show up,
right? And so once we started showing up in those kinds of numbers, it got a little tenuous. So, but anyway, let me take us break, and Baba 505, I'm gonna try to get to you if you want to have something to say. I'll get to you when we come back from the break. Brothers and sisters, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com. And blacktalkradionetwork.com. We'll be right back. You stay with us.
You are listening to African Perspectives with host Brother Oshi on Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasting or live program scheduling, hit them up at timeforanawakening@gmail.com.
Well, 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 well. You're listening to Time for an Awakening Media, part of the Black Talk Radio Network. For podcasts or live programming, hit them up at timeforanawakening.com.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters. Once again, you're listening to African Perspectives here on the Motherland Media Network on timeforanawakening.com and blacktalkradionetwork.com. And yes, Jay, you are right. I'm going to have the misgivings presentation every misgivings that we have and some additional information, not just the, what Mama Marimba has sent me, but also different additional information on talking about, because I agree with you. You know, we need to clearly understand why we shouldn't. Well, of course, we always celebrating, you know, what these Caucasians have done. But Brother Paul sent me some stuff. I was going to read a piece about Brother Julius Malema, who is in Azania, South Africa, Azania. That's which we should call it, Azania. And because they were talking about xenophobia. Well, xenophobia is fear of. And to me, that they should not have used that word, because what they're talking about is the brothers and sisters from other parts of Africa coming down into Azania to get more technical jobs, as opposed to the South Africans, and then them fighting and even killing some of them because of that. Who they should be fighting and killing are the crackers who miseducated them. Jesus. You know, because these brothers from Ghana, from definitely from Nigeria, you know, coming, getting these technical jobs. And he said, no, I will not fight against, I'm not against, you know, I'm not for that. I'm a Pan-Africanist. I'm for Africans, you know, I'm supporting Africans, period. So, but I'm going to maybe read that piece maybe, I don't know, next week. And also, too, those damn wigs they still wear in court. That's right, y'all. They still wearing them damn powdered-ass wigs in court. Other countries have disbanded them, but yet they still doing it. Africa. They doing it in Kenya. Africans wake up. But anyway, Paul sent me this. And you know, Brother Paul always sending me some good stuff. And he sent me this piece. Here's one article by Henry Kissinger. Now, of course, if you didn't know, only because your ass was, your head was up your ass or you're under a rock, how evil Henry Kissinger, just like Zygmunt Brzezinski, just like all of them, just like all these other Europeans, these Caucasians, these Urugus, into eugenics, into depopulation, into all of this stuff. Here, Henry Kissinger quotes from a speech to the World Health Organization, WHO, Council on Eugenics. This is February of 09. February of 09. Once the herd accepts mandatory vaccinations, it's game over. They will accept anything, forcible blood or organ donations, for the greater good. We can genetically modify children and sterilize them for the greater good. Control sheep minds and you control the herd. Control the sheep's mind, control the population's minds, and you control the herd. Vaccine makers stand to make billions. And many of you in this room are investors. It is a big win-win situation. We thin out the herd, and the herd pays us for extermination services. And okay, you see the picture of him there, and well, I don't know, you know what? This is real. This is the mentality of those who are in control. That's why I'm saying I don't believe Fauci. I don't believe Bill Gates. They have always talked about population control. There's a TED, I think it's a TED talk, so to speak, with Bill Gates talking about we have developed vaccinations for population control. Now, here's the kicker. He sent me this piece. Vaccines in your salad. Scientists growing medicine filled plants to replace injections. Vaccines in your salad. He said WGN TV, which is WGN is in out of Chicago. Scientists growing medicine filled plants to replace injections. Vaccines can be a controversial subject for many people, especially when it comes to injections. So what if you could replace your next shot with a salad instead? Researchers at the University of California, Riverside are working on a way to grow edible plants that carry the same medication as in the mRNA vaccine. The COVID-19 vaccine is one of many inoculations which use messenger RNA, mRNA technology to defeat viruses. They work by teaching cells from the immune system to recognize and attack certain infectious diseases. Unfortunately, mRNA vaccines have to stay in cold storage until used or they will lose stability. The University of California Riverside team says if they're successful, the public could eat plant-based mRNA vaccines, which could also survive at room temperature. Thanks to a half a million dollar grant from the National Science Foundation, researchers are now looking to accomplish three goals. First, the team will try to successfully deliver DNA containing mRNA vaccines into plant cells where they can replicate. Next, the study authors want to show that plants can actually produce enough mRNA to replace a traditional injection. Finally, the team will need to determine the right dosage people will need to eat proper replacement vaccinations. Monster variations. Fauci warns lack of COVID-19 vaccinations could lead to a virus mutation. Ideally, a single plant could produce enough mRNA vaccine for a single person, says Juan Pueblo Gerardo. Associate professor in University of California, Riverside, Department of Botany and Plant Science in a university release. We're testing this approach with spinach and lettuce and have a long-term goals of people growing it in their own gardens, Gerardo said. Farmers could also eventually grow entire fields of it. Gerardo and the team of scientists from San Diego and the Carnegie Mellon University say the key to making edible vaccines are there are small organs inside plant cells which help convert sunlight into energy, like chloroplasts. They're tiny, solar-powered factories that produce sugar and other molecules which allow the plant to grow, Trotto explains. They're also an untapped source for making desirable molecules. Previous studies have shown that it is possible for chloroplasts to express genes that are not a natural part of the plant. Gerardo's team accomplished this by sending genetic material inside of a protective casing into the plant cells. In a new study, Gerardo's team with the University of California San Diego's professor Nicole Steinmetz to use nanotechnology to deliver more genetic material into the, you know, remember nanotechnology is that a minute, you know. Wow, damn it. Our idea is to repurpose naturally occurring nanoparticles, namely plant viruses, for gene delivery to plants. Some engineering goes into this to make the nanoparticles go to the chloroplasts and also to render them non-infectious toward the plants. One of the reasons I started working in nanotechnology was so I could apply it to plants and create new technology solutions, not just for food, but for high value products such as well like pharmaceuticals. Well, that's it. That's it on the article. To make pharmaceuticals. The bottom line is, they've always tried to find ways to overtly or covertly put something in your food, in your drink, in the air. See, that's why for me, being a Pan-Africanist and being a sovereigntist, we cannot be sovereign here. We have to get out of here. We have to go home. We have to make Africans on the continent understand that we are one African people. And Africans who have whatever abilities that they have to come back to Africa, kick out the Chinese, kick out the Arabs, kick out the Caucasians, kick out the Indians, kick everybody's ass out and run our continent. Run our continent. Build roads, build highways, build infrastructure, build the kind of energy systems that'll be compatible to where how we want to live and that won't mess up the environment. Do everything necessary so people can have a living. Here in this country, this is about to get deep. Has some of the technology begins to hold, already there's ability to eliminate drivers, driverless cars, driverless trucks. Seen it on 60 Minutes last year. And then there was another piece on, from what I understand recently, I didn't get a chance to see that. But they're saying it's being perfected, that we could drive a truck. Because a human can't drive a truck straight across country. Theoretically, he or she has to stop. There's a log book. There's a log book. By law, they have to. And they have to prove that. They have to show that. They have to. But a driverless truck drives straight from New York to Los Angeles. The only thing they're doing is refueling. And when they pull into the place to refuel, there's a human there. There's a human there to look over everything, to charge it up again if it runs by electricity or gas it up if it runs by fuel, whatever the case may be, to get it back on the road. Get it back on the road as it continues to move across country, delivering what they're delivering, pick up what they're going to pick up, and deliver it elsewhere. I mean, it's going to happen. What are going to happen? What's going to happen to all of these people in that occupation? What's going to happen to, period, to I mean, if I'm Uber, if I'm Lyft, if I'm loving it, I ain't got to pay no humans nothing. All of it's done automatically. It just, you make the call, the car comes to you, it picks you up. You know, you've already told us, the dispatcher, we get, the car has the information of where you're going. You just get in. Because you know, your credit card, all that's done, it takes you where you're going to go. And so you can see where depopulation would be necessary. Because why? Because now, we too many people. No. Just like you said. The eugenics movement, extermination, depopulation. Once the herd accepts mandatory vaccinations, and they, although there's a lot of people who are not accepting these vaccinations, but many people have, haven't they? There are some people who have accepted them who, you know,
who, because I mean, because they're seeing people die. And the fear of people dying around them that they know, am I next? The question becomes, what do I have to do to stay alive? One thing you need to do to stay alive is boost your immune system. Boost your immune system. Barbara Armand sent me this on a way to boost your immune system. You know?
Hi, I'm Dr. Brian Harris, and I have an important question for anyone with arthritis.
Boost your immune system, huh?
Stop everything you were doing.
Let me.
If you suffer from diabetes, you should watch this video.
I don't know. There was a video. That's not it. But Brother Armand sent me a piece on boosting your immune system, some stuff that you can take, you know, rosemary and cloves and some other stuff that you can take, teas. But that's what you need to do. Boost your immune system. You need to get outside. And now, of course, the weather is not going to be conducive to you getting outside. Days are shorter. Daylight time, of course, is shorter. The day is the same. It's still 24 hours in a day. But available daylight time. So I say this, brothers and sisters, you know, this is a very tenuous time for us as a people. You know, it's a very tough time for us as a people. And what needs to happen, what needs to be done, is for us to come together. It's for us to unify. Here we are, a population, a young population. Remember last week, I read to you about the continent that is not suffering from COVID-19, has predicted. When the virus first started emerging, because on other parts of the world, particularly in Europe, people were dying left and right. And then in this country, I believe there's probably already 750,000 people who have died. And now today, even though you don't hear about the death, you don't see those diagrams and so forth anymore, because people who are vaccinated are dying. Because some of the people who, like myself, you know, we're up in age. And being up in age, your immune system is not as strong as it was when you were younger. And on the continent, our population is young. On the average age of 20, the average age of Europe and United States, Europe is about 40-something, the United States is almost 40. The average age. But if Africans can release the vice grip that these sons of have on our minds, then we can think clearly and we can think collectively and we can pull our resources and come together and work with one another, trust one another, build one another, respect one another, excluding everybody outside of us. If you claiming to be African and you are Latino and you support your African side, come on. But if you got the Spanish mindset, the Portuguese mindset, the Puerto Rican mindset, no. No. Keep your ass there.
only those who embrace being African, if that's what you are. And if your ass look Caucasian, I'm sorry for you. Keep your ass with the Caucasians. You, I don't know if you've seen, there's a, I haven't really looked at it, so I surely shouldn't pass judgment on it, but I've seen a glimpse of it, a movie on streaming, I think it's on Netflix, called Passing. And to me, the sisters that supposed to be passing, she don't look like she, you know, Lena Horne could pass. Okay, there are others, some sisters. What was her name? Washington. She definitely could pass. You know, Jerry Washington. Some of you may know. She's an actor just coming out of the, right after the Oscar Michelle time. So you know this is old. She's definitely older than Lena Horne. Because Lena Horne came in the 40s and 50s. This sister's 30s. You know. But she could pass. But she played, she didn't. She identified.
Hey, Oshi.
Yo.
Is that the one that played in, I think it was, Imitation of Man?
Oh, no. Imitation of Life? No.
Imitation of Life.
Imitation
that
of Life.
That wasn't her?
No.
Because I've seen Lena Horne in person. And I don't know what she looked younger, but when I saw her, she must have been around 70-something, maybe. 70-something,
mm-hmm.
I think. And she didn't look like she could pass to me.
I hear you. I agree.
I mean, that's just, you know, I was pretty up close to her. So, I mean,
yeah,
I don't know. But I know the woman from Imitation of Life.
Right.
They said that she could have passed.
Right.
And, you know, the whole thing with what you were just saying about the Baba Louie is that, you know, you have Baba Louis who know they African, but you have a lot of them who pass for white under certain situations. Now, they can't fool me.
Mm-hmm.
Because the thing about the Baba Louie is they have a certain vocal context that always gives it away to me. You know what I mean? Now, when you look at them, you should be able to tell also. But, you know, the thing is, like you said, that Spaniard, that Portuguese,
yeah,
that whole vibe,
right,
allows them to act and behave the way they do. And then you have who I think are the sickest out of all of them, are the ones who come from Puerto Rico. To me, they're the sickest one out of all of them because they should know they have African roots.
Right,
for some reason, right, run away from it on a real serious level. It's just like I always get a kick out of the Dominican and the Haitian fighting with one another.
Right.
Especially when they both dark skin. That, to me, is mm-hmm. comical.
But yeah,
the reality just really boils down to this. Nobody wants to be an African, Oshi.
I know they don't. Jay,
if given the choice.
Jay, I know they don't.
You know what I mean?
I know they don't. It's sad. That's how brainwashed we are.
Other than Africa.
Exactly. Exactly.
I wouldn't want to be nothing else.
Nothing else.
There's nothing finer in the world than being African. The women are the most beautiful in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, compare
I'm glad.
A cracker in a Brazilian, Dominican, Haitian, African, American woman of color. Compare that to a ball of syphilitic pus.
You know, I'm so glad that God wakened my mind and so I can understand who I am and embrace myself and love being an African. I'm so glad.
It's the greatest gift that the Creator ever gave you was to have that African blood in you and for you to have an understanding and a clarity that you are African based on the atrocities that have been placed against us, to have a defining spirit of I'm an African.
Yeah.
Man, there's nothing in this world greater than that.
Yeah, you're right.
And it's unfortunate when you don't realize the beauty of being an African and wanting to be something else. That's why it hurts me whenever I see Africans bleaching their skin all of that madness.
Yeah, but it happens all over. It happens all over.
Totally colonization.
It's $1 billion business. It's $1 billion business.
Well, on a continent where there's not even that much as far as wealth is concerned, but you would spend your last, you would work all week and take more than a third of what you earn to get something to give you lighter, dysfunctional skin. You know what I mean? That's why the Creator will punish you in the manner in which he will if you do that, because you're taking away his godsend.
You know, it's sad how messed up our minds are and how we behave and how we have such deep-seated hatred towards ourselves and towards each other.
But it also shows you know how wicked the white man is, bro.
Yeah, of course.
And that's what we and that's what we don't get, man.
Yeah.
We never study the white man in regards to his diabolical nature and the things that he's done to basically destroy the world.
See, that's why I'm saying
his inhumane behavior towards the planet, man. I mean, to study this. This cracker would be one amazing
thing. Well,
see,
that's why the book Yoruba is so important. That's why the book Yoruba is so important. Mama Marimba, Dr. Marimba Andi has done the work. Read the book. I know there's trembling, but read the book.
I read something that Mama Arimbe put out about Misgivings Day Thursday that Baba had posted.
Yeah.
Today or yesterday, and it was so on point, man.
Yeah,
you know,
I'm gonna read it Wednesday.
You'll never understand that.
Yeah, I'm gonna read it Wednesday.
You need
but listen,
to read
man,
that.
My time is
you
up
need
once
to read
again.
That on Wednesday.
Well, I will. I am. My time is up, Brother Jay. Appreciate you, brother. You have a blessed day.
Hotel,
man. Have a blessed day. Hope to see you on Wednesday, man. We in this program, like we in all of our programs, with the words of Stephen Biko. The most potent weapon in the hands of the oppressor is the minds of the oppressed. This program is dedicated and committed to helping to free the African mind. But not just the M-I-N-D, but the M-I-N-E, because under the feet of African people lies all of the resources that everybody wants, think they can't do it out, and they sure in hell don't want to pay for. Brothers and sisters, you have a blessed and wonderful day. Be safe out there. Shem Hotep means go in peace. Esante Sana means thank you. Bifahodie means our victorious destiny. Brothers and sisters, we will be victorious. Have a safe and wonderful day. Hope to see you on Wednesday. Peace, family.